Afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely. May it please the court, my name is Art Kuhl. I represent the appellee Toys R Us. I'd like to introduce Mr. Daniel Moore, who will be presenting the argument during the appellee's time, who has been admitted pro hoc for the purpose of this motion.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Moore.
Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, may it please the court, I think it is fair to say that when the jury came in and announced its verdict in this case, everyone in the courtroom was surprised. However, that does not mean the verdict was not supportable. And as I look back at this, we should have presented our case in very, very simple terms. We could have presented testimony from Mr. and Mrs. Hyatt, that they purchased the bicycle, that it was used 19 times, had traveled less than 20 miles, and then called the school crossing guard to the stand to say that she saw the pedal fly off the bike and the accident and injury occurred. Had we stopped there, the case would have gone to the jury on a breach of implied warranty of fitness for intended use theory only, and the jury could have returned the verdict that it did in this case, and it would be, I respectfully submit, entirely supportable.
And the product defect under that presentation would have been what?
The obvious failure of the product. The defect would not be identified precisely. It could be a metallurgical defect in the pin that was retaining. It could be the way in which the pedal was assembled. It could be any number of things. But in ordinary, common, lay experience, a pedal should not snap off a brand new bicycle. And everybody who's ever ridden a bike would know that. And I don't think it's required under the law to go beyond that in order to establish a breach of warranty case. Now, there are other cases, and I certainly recognize this, where what went wrong with the product, it wasn't fit, does need to be identified by expert testimony, but that is not this case. And I want to focus on the fitness language that's used in the commercial code. It does not use the word defect. It says fit for the purpose intended. And the analogy I would draw is someone goes into the Bike Works shop here in Dover to purchase a bicycle. A 200-pound man wants to purchase a bicycle to use riding around in mountains and rough terrain. And the people at the store sell him a bicycle that they say will serve that purpose. And it turns out it's a bicycle that is not designed for rough use, and it's not supposed to be used by people that are weigh more than 150 pounds. And then there's a failure and an accident. In that case, you could not argue that the bike was defective. There was nothing defective about the bike, but it was not fit for the purpose for which it was intended. And that would establish the same type of case. That is our view of the evidence. We went beyond that, of course, and got curious and tried to figure out what was wrong with the bike and got into all of this testimony about the assembly of the right pedal and whether it was cross-threaded or not thoroughly threaded and tightened. And then the case degenerated, that's my word, into a battle of experts over what exactly happened and caused this, all of which we contend now is irrelevant to the issue of whether or not this verdict should be sustained. The second part of our argument is that if the court below concluded that there was an irreconcilable conflict between this finding of no negligence and breach of warranty, then the appropriate thing to do was not to favor one over the other, but to return the case for a full trial on all issues. Instead, I'm sorry.
Is the finding of the jury's interrogatory answer about no negligence, there's a couple different alternatives there, isn't it, that would reveal the negative answer One is that there was no negligence. Another is that the evidence was such that you were unable to prove negligence. Right?
True.
Well, which was it here, and does that matter in terms of reconciling the verdicts?
I don't think it matters, and I don't know what is true. But the jury heard a lot of testimony about the custom and practice followed at the store in assembling these bicycles. Nobody could pinpoint exactly what happened with this bicycle. There was no documentation of when it was assembled or who assembled it or anything like that. So they presented custom and usage evidence and had witnesses say, well, we always do it the right way, and since we always do it the right way, it could not have left our hands in this substandard condition. The jury might have believed that. And when I say that I think everyone in the courtroom was surprised at the verdict, that's what I'm referring to. But it could have happened that way. And they could have all very easily agreed that a bicycle, a brand new bicycle, should not collapse after minimal usage. And so they all came together on the implied warranty theory and followed the judge's instruction on that.
So under that circumstance, there's not an irreconcilable conflict?
I don't think so. But if the court below concluded that without saying it in so many words, and if this court concludes that, then I submit that the appropriate remedy is a retrial on all issues. Unless there are further questions, I have nothing more to add.
Wait a minute. Why wouldn't we simply affirm the verdict?
That's our first request, that this case be brought to a merciful end. But alternatively, if the verdict is rejected because of this irreconcilability, then I submit that the appropriate remedy is a retrial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, Daniel Moore on behalf of Toys R Us. Before this court for review is the judgment entered below on the case that actually was tried, on the evidence that was actually received, not on a case that could have been tried. And the judgment that was entered below in favor of Toys R Us must be affirmed, as the record of that evidence before the trial court did not create a triable issue on the question of a breach of implied warranty of merchantability. As this court knows, the bicycle in question was purchased in September of 1998, I want to say for $59, from Toys R Us. With that, Mr. Hyatt also purchased a service, something that was severable from the bike, namely the service of having the bike assembled. People can buy the bike and take it off. They can assemble it themselves. They can have it assembled somewhere else. So he bought two things, a bicycle and a service. Subsequently, there was a failure of the bike. At least there was a bike accident and a broken right pedal. So there were two theories of liability that went forward in this case. Two theories of liability, two claims put forth in the complaint. First, that the bike, the product sold, contained a defect of manufacturing or design, that in fact was a breach of the implied warranty of fitness or merchantability as set forth in 2-314. And second, and therefore Toys R Us as seller was answerable for that breach. Secondarily, that Toys R Us, in providing the service, in assembled it negligently. And that both the defect in the bicycle was the proximate cause of the accident, and the assembly was the proximate cause of the accident. So it went forward on the two theories. Toys R Us, on the defect, brought in the manufacturer, impleaded Rand. Now, at the close of all evidence of the second trial, Toys R Us moved for a judgment as a matter of law and move for judgment as a matter of law on the breach of the warranty claim. And one of the bases given for that was the evidence that had been put in, including the evidence put in by Hyatt himself. Now, Mr. Castle says, you know, we probably didn't need an expert on defect. Well, I think that an expert wasn't necessary, as this court indicated in Reibold Group versus Kempro, because ordinarily you need an expert to say, what is the manufacturing defect? What's the design defect? It's very rare that it is so in the ken of a layperson as to not be required. And there's another factor, and it's spelled out by this court. It's not just whether the circumstantial evidence can establish a defect because it is so obvious. And remember, it's not the bike, it's the pedal. The second thing is whether or not that circumstantial evidence has such clarity as to effectively rule out every other cause. Because as long as there's another cause that is suggested by the evidence, you need an expert. And that's what this court has said.
Let me stop you right there. What is the other potential cause if you're riding a basically brand new bike? I mean, there was nobody put in any evidence that the bike had been run over by a car or, you know, something, it had been damaged in some way so that it was no longer in a condition to be used. So we've got basically a brand new bike. A kid is riding on the bike. It's not as if you've got a grown man trying to ride a child's bike or, you know, anything like that of misusing it. And so you've got a kid riding a bike and the pedal flies off of it. You know, what is there other than there's something wrong with the way that bike was put together as a conclusion?
Or there was something wrong with, in fact, either the pedal or the design of the bike or the washer or the locking nut mechanism. The bike
But wait a second. Does it matter whether it was widget number one or widget number two that failed? If you've got a totally functioning machine and one part of it clearly fails, it, you know, falls off, and it's not supposed to, then you've got a machine that was not fit. Why?
I appreciate, Justice, your question. There are two things here. We've got the two various theories. You asked, does it matter? It matters enormously. And one of the reasons why it matters enormously is because the plaintiff's expert testified, his expert on defect, that the failure was the cross-threading. It was the negligent assembly. And that's precisely. You asked initially, the first part of your question to me was, what other cause could it possibly be? Well, the other cause, their expert on defect, Dr. Langford, who took the stand, testified as to what he believed the cause was.
But
and what he said was,
rejected that, didn't it?
That is correct. And what his expert testified to was, and under cross-examination, and he testified that, no, had the bike not been negligently assembled, had they not cross-threaded the pedal, then the problems of design, the problems of manufacture wouldn't matter. The bicycle would have lasted. It would not have failed. The failure was not in the design manufacture of the product. It was in its assembly. And that was precisely the state of the evidence at the close of all of the evidence. And
now that was from the plaintiff's expert.
That's from the plaintiff's own expert. The plaintiff had two.
But you agree that the jury rejected his testimony?
I agree that the jury found that there was no negligence. I don't agree that the jury rejected his testimony.
Well, they at least rejected it in part.
I think that's fair. I think they may have found that if in fact what the jury may well have concluded is, yes, if it was misthreaded, that would have caused the problem and would have been the proximate cause. But as Mr. Castle suggested, the jury might have concluded, based on evidence in the case presented by Toys, that it wasn't misthreaded. That's the only thing I'm trying to indicate.
Well, you've lost me completely on that.
I probably then was very inelegant. The expert Langford testified that in fact the reason for the failure, in his view,
I understand how you answered Justice Berger's question.
Right.
that there was an alternative theory.
I appreciate that. I apologize, Your Honor.
It wasn't based solely on a design defect. There was an alternative theory. What I don't understand is your response to Justice Ridgely's question about if the jury rejects negligent assembly, does that remain as an alternate theory?
You probably didn't understand it because it's flat out wrong. The jury had to reject it. The jury had to reject that notion that that's what caused the accident. I think you're right, Mr. Justice. I think you're right. Because otherwise you don't get there. I think they had to simply flat out say, we don't think it was, we don't believe that it was negligently done. Ergo, that can't be the cause of the accident.
Logically, there has to be some other explanation, and that takes us back.
And that takes us back here. And I will only say this, and the reason why this judgment absolutely must be affirmed, where it takes us back is to no evidence. There was no evidence on defect independent. And here the trial judge was right, and the trial judge was able to fix it. There was no evidence independent of the negligent assembly.
Well, but see, I may just be missing everything here, but it seems to me that if you've got a bike and the pedal flies off for no reason, then you have basically eliminated all possibilities other than that this bike was not properly designed, built, assembled, whatever, but it was not fit to be ridden. Therefore, it was a breach of the warranty of merchantability.
Two things I want to point out. First, there was evidence that there was more damage to the bike. Even his expert, Mr. Stevenson, testified this. There was more damage to the bike than was consistent with what the plaintiff said as to how many times Mr. Hyatt rode the bike. There was some evidence of that. There was some evidence from which the jury could have concluded that the state of the bike was such that there was another cause independent of. There was a suggestion, and it's in the briefs, that the bicycle was abused in some way. There was more than a suggestion from the physical examination of the bicycle that the damage to the bicycle, not caused by the accident, was inconsistent with using it 19 times. There was something else for that jury. I don't know if the jury utilized that evidence. I cannot say if the jury used that and concluded, therefore, that there was another reason for the failure. What I can say is this. The evidence on breach of warranty, when all the evidence was in, all of it pointed only to the negligent assembly. That's what it pointed to. There is nothing in this record that says independent of that.
Okay, and the problem I'm having is that you're separating out two things. You're saying there's a bicycle and there's the assembly of the bicycle. And the only thing that could have been wrong here is with the assembly of the bicycle, based upon the evidence that was presented. And so if that's the only thing that could have been wrong, then the only possible verdict could have been that there was negligent assembly, right? And the jury said, no, there wasn't negligent assembly. And what I'm asking or concerned about is, why can't you look at the bike as a unit that's been assembled, not that there's part A is the bike and part B is the assembly of it. So you've got an assembled bike, and it gets put into a consumer's hand, and at the time it gets put into the consumer's hand, it's unfit, perhaps because of the way it was assembled, perhaps because of any other reason. We don't, to a certain extent, we don't care, because it was unfit, and that is demonstrated by the fact that in normal use, the pedal flies off. What's wrong with that theory?
What's wrong with that theory is a couple of things. In the first instance, there has to be some evidence, circumstantial or direct evidence, not the mere happening of an accident. This isn't a res ipsa case and cannot be a res ipsa case, which applies not only to negligence cases, but also requires an exclusivity of control. There are specific elements that must be proved to prove a breach of implied warranty of merchantability. And one of those elements is that the product is in some way defective as a matter of manufacture or design. Now, in this particular case, all of the evidence, at the close of the evidence, all of it piled together, pointed at one thing, a negligent assembly. When we got to prayer conference, the trial court, quick-handedly, Justice Berger was wrestling over some of the same things. One of the things that the trial court wanted to do, even though the trial court had already granted the motion for judgment, finding, in essence, there is nothing here on warranty, what you have is negligent assembly. The trial court wanted to instruct on warranty anyways over the objection of Toys R Us with the reasoning that, you know, if you put the bike together badly and then you sold it, you sold the defective bike. The defect is a subset, if you will, of the assembly. The problem with that, even if that were possible, even if we mixed concepts here, you have a practical problem with that. It becomes wholly parasitical of the negligence, and therefore the court never should have instructed on the breach, should only have instructed on the negligence. The court created the problem by instructing, even after finding there was legally insufficient evidence of any defect, other than, I'll say it again, the negligent assembly. The court created the problem by nonetheless, over objection, instructing. The court created the problem, and the court had the power to fix it. And the trial judge did, in the NOV, fix the problem.
But if negligence is not an element of the breach of warranty, the implied warranty, why is there a problem? I mean, is it possible to view these verdicts as consistent? That's the first question I have for you. The second one, this whole process of granting the judgment, directed verdict, and then charging the jury after all the evidence is in, contradictory to that. Were you prejudiced by that, or was your evidence the same throughout the defense anyway?
It was the same. This was at the close of case. The only thing we had left to do was jury prayers. We were not prejudiced by the you're talking about the second trial, am I correct?
Right.
We were not prejudiced by that, I don't believe, no.
Okay.
I don't think that made an impact. I don't think that the verdict is necessarily and inherently inconsistent. I think in this case the inconsistency in the problem was simply made, and I think there is a problem. I think it was created by the trial judge who instructed on breach of warranty when there was not sufficient evidence to create a triable issue there. All you had was negligence. And I think, therefore, that was the problem. And the remedy was in fact, the NOV. So that is why I believe that what this court must do, consistent with that record and consistent with Delaware law, is affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, Dan Bennett on behalf of third-party defendant Rand International. I only have a few minutes. I will be as quick as I can because I do want to address some of the issues that the court has raised this afternoon. With respect to third-party defendant Rand International, keep in mind that we were a third-party defendant. To the extent that claims exist against us, is they're only from Toys R Us, and they're only from Toys R Us if plaintiff has a claim against Toys R Us for a design or manufacturing defect, because those are the only claims that could be able to be passed through from Toys R Us to Rand. At the end of all evidence, those defect claims were dismissed by the court. The court entered judgment as a matter of law on the defect claims. Therefore, those claims against Toys R Us vanished, and the third-party complaint vanished. That order from the court has not been appealed to this court. The appeal to this court was on the trial court's decision to enter a judgment notwithstanding the verdict on behalf of Toys R Us.
So the question is, why are you here?
That's my first question, yes. And that's about as simple as I can make it. Since it seems as though the justices have questions about this negligent assembly theory and how the court could allow or how that could be a consistent verdict. If the only issue presented was negligent assembly and they found no negligence, keep in mind that what happened here was that the experts agreed that this accident happened as a result of the cross-threading of the spindle into the socket of the bicycle. You basically have three parts to your pedal. You have the socket where the spindle or axle gets screwed into, and then you have the pedal cage that you place your foot on and turn. What happened in this instance is that the plaintiffs alleged that immediately after the accident, they looked at the pedal and noticed that since now the cage was no longer there, what happened is the cage separated from the spindle and flew off, that you had the spindle sticking into the sprocket at an angle. And they said, well, why is it sticking in there at an angle? And the experts concluded that it was that sticking in there at the angle that caused this failure of the pedal cage. That was the testimony of both of plaintiff's experts, both Stevenson and Langford. Their position was that it had to have left Toys R Us that way, and therefore it had to have been negligent assembly.
Because it wasn't designed to fit that way.
Correct.
Nor was it manufactured to fit that way.
Correct. Because no one, and I think that Langford even says, no one in their right mind would expect somebody to cross-thread this spindle into the bicycle. So if you have a negligent, so that's the negligent assembly position by the plaintiffs. The problem is that wasn't all the evidence. All the evidence was showed that there were marks on the top of the spindle that none of the experts had any explanation to how they could have possibly gotten there. There was a marks along the outside of where the sprocket was that showed that the somebody had tried to tighten this with a wrench. Toys R Us had testified that we don't tighten them with a wrench. We tighten them with a tool specifically made for that purpose, which doesn't leave any marks. So there was this inconsistency with the marks there present. There was the inconsistency with marks on the top of the spindle. There was this inconsistencies with damage to the cage that just could not be reconciled. So the jury could certainly find that this spindle had been cross-threaded, but they could also find that that wasn't due to any negligent assembly on the part of Toys R Us. And as Judge Babiar said, it was my fault knowing that the only possible breach of warranty issue was the negligent assembly to allow both the negligent assembly and the breach of warranty claims to go forward, because it would have added to confusion. And that's what he says in his order. And that's why not only do we believe that the judgment notwithstanding, the verdict should be affirmed as does Toys R Us, but we also don't believe that regardless of whether it's affirmed or not, that we have any role, because those defect claims have been priorly dismissed without an appeal.
Thank you. Your Honor, very briefly, I didn't think Rand would be here either. I'm surprised that they've been involved in this. Delaware law permits a consumer to recover on a breach of implied warranty theory, and also permits an injured consumer to recover or pursue a case for negligence in the design, manufacture, and so forth of a product. They are not mutually exclusive. The evidence here we submit fully supports the verdict that there was a breach of the implied warranty. Unless there are other questions, I have nothing more to add to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.